The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Hi, this is Chase McCorder with Institutional Investing in Infrastructure. I'm sitting with Dave Chen, chairman of Equilibrium Capital, a real assets investment manager focused on sustainable investing. We're here at the Equilibrium Forum 2019, an annual conference that they host. And I just wanted to sit down with Dave and pick his brain on some of the key takeaways from the Equilibrium Forum. So Dave, thanks for joining us. Just a little bit of background on Equilibrium and the Equilibrium Forum.
Sure. We formed the firm about 10 years ago around the idea that sustainability was an economic shift, it was an economic advantage. It will also result in end products. And any time that you have a shift in value creation, our belief was that you have an opportunity to generate alpha. And we saw that the real assets categories were a direct way of exhibiting, if we saw that advantage, it was a direct way of exhibiting those attributes. And then we serve predominantly institutional investors. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how we got started. And we primarily operate two specific portfolios in the area of agriculture and food, and one in the area of distributed infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I would say that with regard to the forum, when we created the forum, it was because the idea of sustainability being economic and as opposed to responsibility, advocacy, doing social good, the idea that sustainability was really about economics was at the time, 8 years ago, really not well understood. And so we created the forum as a way of not talking about ourselves and our products, but about talking about the issues and bringing to bear. And we had a hypothesis at the time that the folks that actually understood the most about this were actually the largest institutional investors. Mm-hmm. And so we brought to the front folks that were executing these kinds of economically driven strategies in sustainability. And we used the forum really as a exposure and education and discussion place. Today, as we stand in 2019, and you got this morning in my opening remarks, we see that the field has fundamentally changed. Every single major platform, investment platform, has an ESG product. Some are the number of private equity products that are rolling out. You just sort of count the large PE platforms that are doing that, as well as green real estate now, for as an example. You've got a number of funds that are out there labeling themselves that way. And in the infrastructure, you've got funds from as diverse as Ares, Harrison Street, et cetera, on top of us, mm-hmm. that are talking about, quote unquote, sustainable or sustainable demographics, infrastructure, and building portfolios around that.
Mm-hmm. So going on that, and I think one of the panels that I found interesting outside of the start of it was talking about implementing ESG. And I think the title was The Messy Implementation. So any thoughts, background on that as far as just implementing ESG from a granular perspective? Because we know there's the boxes to check, but as far as implementing it in real world situations, anything on that?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we pride ourselves, if you're going to be on the leading edge of an issue, you want to be able to take full advantage of the learnings from being at the leading edge and use that to stay ahead and keep your portfolio and your portfolio construction both current, but also to create the opportunity to create more value for your investors. ESG is a great example of that. About 3 years ago, we had an investment in a water treatment facility that was associated with a corporate entity. It was in effect a privatization of their water treatment facility, and it was a situation where what the company did was oftentimes on an ESG watch list. It is one of the largest corporations in the world, and we were doing what we thought was a sustainability oriented value, which is we're cleaning the water. Mm-hmm. And we're preventing the water from going into either the groundwater or going into the municipal treatment facility. Mm-hmm. And truth be told, this company it actually has a very progressive sustainability program. They actually care a lot. Mm-hmm. And they actually are very substantive about that. So we submitted this to our LPAC, as well as submitted it to an informal group of our investors that have very sophisticated and codified ESG protocols. And 4 out of 5 voted that this was within their protocol, and 1 out of 5 said that it was outside their protocol. And it was the discovery and the process that we went through of doing this that really got us thinking about, well, now wait a minute. We sort of have thought that there's a unified ESG protocol. And we knew it wasn't, but we sort of mentally thought, well, yeah, they're all gonna basically be kind of the same. I would say that of the 5 that we submitted to, 3 of them had a couple of religious pension plans, right? religious orders pension mm-hmm. plans. And almost all of them had very sophisticated, well thought out ESG programs. And it was the learning for us was hearing how they thought about this, right? And it led me to sort of get our troops together and go, you know, there is no one, and I mean to use this term extremely loosely. There is no one ethic, mm-hmm. right? And I can guarantee that because of our Middle Eastern clients, that one of them will put together a Sharia-driven ESG policy. And in their worldview mm-hmm. and their perspective, which they are entitled to, they will come up with a set of check boxes or constraints about what is proper ESG. And equally important, we will have a... let's call it a religious order-driven healthcare pension plan that will have an equally ethical and well thought out, sophisticated ESG program. Mm-hmm. And what we realized in this process, and it was tremendously powerful learning for us, was it's impossible to think about one, because the ESG reflects a true depth, deep ESG program will mm-hmm. reflect values. Mm-hmm. And there'll be very different values mm-hmm. or very different weights on the value or executions of the value. And so we then came up with, you know, the most important thing is actually not an ESG protocol. The most important thing is a conflict resolution policy for an ESG protocol. Because I became very convinced at the time that if we put another water treatment facility from another industry in front of these 5, we may very well get another 4 versus 1, but it'll be a different 4 and it'll be a different 1. Mm-hmm. All right? And so now how do we resolve this issue? Because all 5 are quote unquote ethical. Mm-hmm. And all 5 are equally well thought out and sophisticated, mm-hmm. right? And none of them is being haphazard, mm-hmm. right? So that's why we did this panel, The Messiness of ESG, because when you're at the front end of ESG, everything's black and white.
Yeah.
It's really clear what we're all about. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into it, you find out, well, now wait a minute. How do we interpret that?
There's some gray areas.
And then as an asset owner, I have a fund manager that disagrees with me, or I have a fund manager that has not so much violated it, but their investment doesn't match our ESG policy mm-hmm. at the transactional level. possibly at the portfolio level it's okay, but at the transactional level. So how do we then deal with this? And what's our way of dialoguing about mm-hmm. that? And so when you're early on in a cycle, you get to have a very antiseptic black and white. When you mm-hmm. actually get hip deep into it, you get into all sorts of, now, wait a minute, how are we going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the way we resolved it was we went to our the entity that disagreed disagreed with our policy, with our investment. And one of the things that we said to our team that was sent there to go sit down and talk to them was, we're not here to argue about which one of the policies is quote unquote right. What we're trying to seek to understand is a mutual understanding of the way that we approach executing and thinking about this. And was it methodologically driven?
Mm-hmm.
And to have that mutual respect, and then to figure out ways that we can quote unquote resolve the issue, mm-hmm. and that we couldn't take on this issue at the level of who's more right, who's more ethical, mm-hmm. but at the level of oh, I understand how you got there. I understand how you got there. Now, how do we then resolve this?
Mm-hmm. So last question, and then we'll let you get back to the forum. Just the first slide, I think I told you, it struck me, just since 2012, just the growth in ESG overall, companies that focus on it, reference B Corps. So just the overall growth of ESG, just what's your overall, based on the growth of this forum, what's your overall take on the projection for ESG as kind of a standard? I mean, do you see, We discussed that the investors may be concerned ESG could lose focus if there's a downturn, things go back to looking at deals. Do you think ESG is ingrained enough at this point that it's going to be a clear standard for moving forward even?
Yeah, I think this is ESG and sustainability is not just one thing. It's mm-hmm. it's a number of variables that are coming at it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And first and foremost, there is a demographic issue. Let me put it this way: in certain industries, in certain cities in the world, it's hard to take a Class A tenant mm-hmm. and lease them a beautiful Class A building that isn't certified for one of the green standards.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And so there's just a demographic and reputational component to this now.
Mm-hmm.
That may seem kind of light and airy, but tell that to CBRE when they're trying to lease up, you know, five floors of a downtown
yeah.
tower.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a light and airy issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that going to be susceptible to a downturn? Well, it wasn't susceptible during the last downturn.
Yeah.
In fact, that's where we saw the green real estate growth.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at infrastructure, and you and I talked about this, the Trump policies have, in effect, caused what should have been a recession in renewable energy. And renewable energy in the United States in the last 2 years have not really seen much of a hiccup,
mm-hmm.
all right? Including residential.
Mm-hmm.
So I question how much of this is now baked into other market signals, other incentives, and how much of it is simply it's susceptible to a downturn in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the fact that in some ways we have always defined true sustainability as a competitive advantage. And if that's the case, then it's economically driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, then the question is, during a downturn, is the economic advantage gone?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something that in fact, you know, lasts as a result of that?
Mm-hmm.
So I look at this from a governmental standpoint, I look at this from a market standpoint, I look at this from an economic advantage standpoint, I look at this from a resource productivity standpoint, and I think that those are the real underpinnings of the move to ESG.
Mm-hmm.
The classic example, I think, of why this has changed for me from a CSR, goodness of heart, to a corporate strategy and a productization is the low carbon economy.
Mm-hmm.
and you can tear apart all the various subsectors of the industry that add to a low carbon economy. But in a downturn, are you going to bet back on the internal combustion engine? Mm-hmm. Or are you betting that, in fact, the advantages now that accrue to an electric drivetrain, mm-hmm. and the economy of scale that's going to accrue to an electric drivetrain, and the new patterns of consumer preferences as well as the consumer usage of transportation has changed, are you willing to bet against, quote-unquote, the low carbonization and electrification of the electric car or transportation infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's not a recession or an economic or even a fad issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a train that's screaming through, and you're either on it or you're off it.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll always be companies that, you know, as much as we joke about buggy whips and horse harnesses, there were companies that said, I vote with the harness.
Yeah.
And there are companies that said, you know, I'll go vote with this gasoline internal combustion thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see the same thing happening.
Interesting. Well, thank you for your time, Dave.
Thank you.
I'll let you get back to the forum.
All right, thanks.
All right.